Hi, this is Larry London. I welcome you to the Voice of America. Welcome to Border Crossings. Today we have a very special guest on our program. He is a Brit Award nominee and an artist who's been number one before on the charts. And not only that, he's a multi-platinum recording artist with many, many millions of sales and streams. And he's got a brand new single out, which is called Biblical. We would like to welcome to our show Callum Scott, who joins us today on Border Crossings. Welcome to the show, Callum.
Yeah, I am incredibly jealous of your voice, Larry. You have such a smooth voice for, like, it's just, I could just sit and listen to that all day.
Oh, well, thank you. You're so kind to say that. And I can say the same to you. I love your music. Now we're into the end of summer, and the album is coming out soon. That's the date I keep getting is soon. What's the thought?
That's as specific as we're allowed to say. Specific. It means I don't get into any trouble, but yeah, soon. But the single Biblical has just been, it's just been so amazing just to watch the reactions of that happen, you know, since we released it, and seeing the videos emerge of people dancing to it as their first dance song at their wedding or proposing to people. It's just, it's so beautiful, Larry. It really is. So come on and give me tonight, and the rain.
Yes, and so the obvious question, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time, is this song, what's the connection to religion? What's the connection to biblical?
So I totally get what you're saying there, and I understand that there will be a lot of people who will have that connection to it. I mean, I guess the beautiful thing about music is that, you know, it's there for interpretation, right? I suppose my understanding of biblical was immeasurable, you know, epic biblical proportions. So when we were writing this song, which was in the lockdown, it was like, how do you write a song about love when love itself is immeasurable? You know, it's between everyone and everything. It transcends across, you know, everything. And it in itself is unquantifiable. You know, I would never be able to say, oh, well, I love you this much, because it's like, you know, you love them the world over. It's, and I think, you know, that's what we wanted to write about, wanted to sort of immortalize that. And because it happened in the lockdown, it was one of the cruelest things that the pandemic brought, was that separation from those loved ones, you know, and not being able to visit, not being able to spend time or contact with those people. And so I think that for us was what really sort of elevated the performance and the lyric. And, you know, it's to be still in the same sort of position, and some countries are finding it's still quite difficult. It still seems so relevant right now to have a song like that.
And you recorded the new music in the Abbey Road Studios?
I did, partly. I got to record in Abbey Road Studios when the restrictions had lifted enough for us to be able to travel. I got to go to Abbey Road Studios, got to walk down the same corridors as the Beatles and all that kind of stuff. And there's definitely, when you're stood at the microphone, you definitely feel eyes on you. I don't know what it is, that people are definitely staring at you going, you better do a good job. This is the time you're going to pull up your trousers and do a good job. So I had to strap in but I think I just sang it with so much conviction because I believed it. You know, this song really speaks to me, you know, the lyric of being like, you know, give me tonight and the rest of your life. I want to have it all with you. I mean, it's just, somebody said that to me, Larry, it'd be a hot mess on the floor. You know, it's exactly what you want to hear from somebody. And I think that's what really sort of, we imbued the song with that emotion. So yeah, it's a real pleasure to have it out, and the music video out as well, and versions left, right and center coming out on YouTube and on TikTok and all the platforms. It's a really special song.
I'm in the corner watching you kiss her. Oh, and I'm giving it my all. I'm not the guy you're taking home. Ooh, I keep dancing on my own in the night. Sit down in the corner watching.
And there's a bit of pressure now because the last bit of music you put out did very well and was, you know, tops of the chart in 21 countries on iTunes. And you got all these great reviews from Billboard and everybody saying great things about the new music. So I'm sure you're feeling it because it's been a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, I am feeling it, Larry. I was definitely feeling it. I mean, you know what? I remember talking to my manager the other day and saying that I remember when I had first put out my version of Dancing on My Own, before we put it out as a single, before I was even a blip on the radar, I put it out, a little homemade video in a little back bedroom in my mum's house. And I remember getting 1,000 views and I was celebrating hard. I had champagne. I was like cheering from the rooftops. And like, so it's hard to hear. I mean, what somebody quoted me the other day, it was, I think the song's done 740 million streams on Spotify. I can't even fathom that number. I can't even, you know, and I tell my manager, I'm like, please don't tell me numbers like that because it's just so hard for me to take that in. You know, I'm so grateful for those kind of numbers, but you know, the other side of that is it is quite intimidating because you're like, well, what if the next song only gets us, you know, one play and it's my mum? You know, it's like you worry about that sort of stuff, but so far so good. There's still so many people sending me messages, you know, since the release date saying how much they love this song. So hopefully we're on to a winner with this one too.
And did you hear from Robin? Did she respond to?
Yeah, eventually. I mean, it had been a few years, so I was really intimidated. I did think that at one point, she hates it, she hates me, she's it, over. But we bumped into each other at a radio station in London, and she just walked by me, very casually just walked by me, and I was like, that's Robin. And then we got introduced, and I kept it together. I was very cool. I was like, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for this song. You know, very, you know, relate to the lyric. And she was like, your version's so beautiful. And thank you so much. And we had this really beautiful, respectful conversation. Got into the lift, cried like a baby. I don't know what it is. I guess I was under so much pressure. And she, you know, that song has done, my version of that song has done so much for my career. And without her, it would have never happened. So it was like speaking to your hero. So it was I contained myself until I got to the lift, and then I did the ugly cry.
So who else does Callum Scott get influence from and listen to?
I mean, Adele is my all-time hero. I think she just sings with such conviction. I sang her, I watched her sing at Wembley 2018 when she had her last live dates. Mm-hmm. And she had 4 dates there, I believe, and this was the second of the 4. And she was singing every song like it was the last time she was going to sing it. And I have so much respect for that. But then inevitably she did lose her voice and she couldn't do the last 2 songs. So essentially I got to see her do her last show, which is amazing. I mean, I hope she does plenty more, but seeing her doing that in person just reminds me of how badly I want to do the same thing. Just going to venues across the country, across the world, singing your heart out as if it's the last time you're going to sing it and hearing everybody sing those songs. It's just, I mean, it's incredible to me when, you know, a room full of people do that or, you know, a venue full of people do that. I always am so blown away by people's reactions to these songs and, you know, so definitely Adele. I mean, my music was heavily influenced by my mum. So I used to listen to her stuff in the car, whether it was going swimming lessons or to school or whatever it was, it would be Celine Dion, it would be Cher, it would be Michael Jackson, Prince, George Michael, Meatloaf we used to listen to, all a bit of an eclectic song choice, but all those huge voices, Larry, which is I guess why, you know, it's the kind of path I stepped in, I suppose.
Right. And so speaking of the path you stepped in, it wasn't always music. You were in human resources before, and how did you all of a sudden decide this was the career? You know, I mean, there you are on television on Britain's Got Talent. How did you make that decision?
You know what? I think it was one of those things where, and it's quite surreal because I have moments like this all the time where I'll be on stage and I'll be performing the song and then I'll have flashbacks to me sat at my human resources job just responding to an email that Barbara had sent about somebody who's parking in the wrong place or whatever it was. And, you know, I flash back to moments like that where I was sat on my computer dreaming of this kind of stuff. And then I come back and I'm on stage and it's like, it's very surreal. But yeah, used to work in a human resources job and was there for 8 years after school. In the meantime, I was sort of singing, and but it was, I was kind of impersonating my sister a little bit, sort of trying to do what she did, which she was singing in front of crowds and wowing them, and I would be sat there so proud of her. And then I would try to emulate that in my room in the shower. And she overheard me, took it upon herself to put me in a competition. I stress that it wasn't me who decided that. I mean, I did try and escape out of the bathroom window on that night. But the second I stepped off stage in front of that, there was a pub full of about 10 people. But that reaction that I got was just the most life-affirming thing I've ever... It was just like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And that's what I've been chasing since, you know. We applied for Britain's Got Talent. I mean, that's all on the internet for people to see. It's a very emotional. And then since then, I've just been working my backside off, just working hard. We released Dance on My Own as a single, and it just been an absolute adventure, Larry, ever since, really. Because I need you to
talking with Callum Scott. Now, what is the best advice you got on the show, and how could you apply it or use it, you know, to the benefit of the young people who are listening right now and watching right now that say, wow, I want to be like Callum Scott? I mean, what advice has really resonated for you?
I mean, there were a lot of moments on that show where as a young lad had seen Simon Cowell, for example, and the presenters that are on the show, since I was young and had watched those guys, you know, go through hundreds of thousands of potential, you know, music artists that they'd either cast aside or they'd created. You know, I had the pleasure of duetting with Leona Lewis on one of my songs, You Are the Reason, and she came from the same sort of talent show with Simon. So I've seen those guys for, you know, growing up, and then to be in front of them and to be getting advice from them and that kind of stuff is just so overwhelming. There was a moment where Simon said to me that he had never heard somebody with the talent I'd got in all the years he'd been doing the show. And I was just like, he's not talking about me. Like, this is imposter syndrome at its absolute best. Like, this is the guy behind me or something. I don't know what's going on. There was a couple of moments I had with Simon, and he was always very, just do your best. You know what you're doing. You just believe in yourself. You know what you're doing. And I think that kind of trust and belief that he had in me, I took that and really believed it myself. And I've always had a hard time believing in myself. I've always had like I said, with the imposter syndrome, then I've always been one of those, am I good enough? You know, am I going to get far? People going to listen to me? Even with this sophomore album, you know, I'm sat there writing it, some of it in lockdown, some of it 2019. I'm thinking, are people going to like this album? You know, are people going to listen to it? Am I going to be relevant? And it's very easy to get caught up in that trail of thought, because actually, you know, I had those thoughts about the first album, and some of those songs have resonated with people so hard that they want to use it as a first dance at a wedding song, you know, and that kind of stuff has made me believe in myself again and again and again. And, you know, I think you've got to do yourself a justice. You've got to believe in yourself and do things to your highest capability, and, you know, just, like I said, give it everything you've got. Work hard. And, I mean, so far, so good. Hopefully it continues.
Yes, and of course, I'm sure the best part is still yet to come, because as we talked about before we went on the air, that you are very excited about the end of COVID, or at least the end of the restrictions or the relaxing of the restrictions. Concerts are starting again. So,
like, I got the opportunity to tour with the Pentatonics in 2018, and I got to go to all parts of America. Not all of it, you know, it's a big country. It's still I still found it hard to understand that you can be driving all night and still be in the same state. That was still bonkers to me. But yeah, so I got to tour all of America, and it was such an honor to be able to go around and sing to Americans all across the country, and to go out in front of a new audience each night and in a different part of the country. It was so amazing. And I don't even feel that was extensive enough. So as soon as these restrictions are relaxed and I can get out to America, so many of my American fans have been saying, when are we going to get a Callum Scott tour in America? And that's something I've not done yet. I've toured in some venues, but I want to do like an exclusive, like going through top to bottom, left to right, and spend more time there. I'm signed out of LA, so I've not even been back to my label in almost 2 years now. So I'm definitely, my heart is aching to come back to America.
Did I read correctly that I know the new single is Biblical. Is the album also going to be called Biblical? Or have you decided a name?
Yeah, no, it's not called Biblical. I can't possibly confirm what it's called, Larry, as much as I would love to tell you. But it's the collection of songs on this album, I feel, are probably my strongest work yet. You know, the first album was definitely me finding my feet a little bit. This second album was me sort of stepping into my role, really. You know, seeing how some of the music had related on the first album. I just thought, you know, I've got a responsibility to my fans to, you know, to step up and to continue writing music that means so much to them. So this second album is a lot more confident and a lot more mature, and you know, I found my feet a little bit, I think, and it feels good to sit there and say that, for sure.
In the new song, in the video for the new song. I mean, you enjoyed
it.
How much creativity did you get to put into the production of the video?
Well, you know, I visioned the video in space. I mean, I know it's incredibly difficult to film in space unless you're an astronaut. So it was kind of the practicalities of that was diminishing a little bit. But when we got together with Franklin and Marchetta, the amazing production duo and the directors on the music video, they were like, we see this underwater. And I was like, well, that's funny you should say that, because it was like the weightlessness I was imagining, you know, and the infinite amount of space. You almost have that in water as well. So it was a perfect transition for me to work under that. To work underwater. I mean, I've never been that overdressed for the pool before, Larry. I will say that. I had my jeans, my boots, my jacket, belt, jewelry, the lot. There was a bit of a panic on when I realized that I couldn't swim quite as well with all that gear on. But it was so fun filming underwater, and it all looked so incredible. And the moment where I smashed through from the observing world into the water, that was me just jumping off of a stepladder into the water about 10 times. And at one point I stepped back and I was like, this is my day job now. So I used to work at a computer typing in all sorts, and now I'm just jumping in and out of a pool. You know, so lucky, so grateful. It was so much fun.
Yeah, who knows what comes next? The next video. Did you play drums growing up? Is that what I
did? Yeah, I did. I was a drummer back in school. I mean, it's the cool instrument, right? You just get to beat the hell out of these drums and these cymbals. So it was like the cool thing for me to do. But after that, I was in a tribute band as well. I was in a tribute band to Maroon 5. Oh. And there were four of us, Larry. So what do you reckon we called ourselves?
What?
Maroon 4.
Maroon 4.
Oh, I loved it.
You didn't have any lawyers, did you? Of course not.
No legal issues, thank God for that. But that was so fun, just playing Maroon 5 songs and I had a tattoo sleeve I had to roll up because I've got no tattoos. Oh, it was insane.
You went all in. Wow.
But do you know what? As soon as they sang that, you know that Sugar song that they go really high, I was like, I'm out, guys.
That's it. Because your voice is a very bluesy sounding voice.
He has an incredible range. I was just like, Adam can take it from here.
So speaking of names, what three names are the top contenders for the album? Can you share that at least? You don't have to tell me which album name you're picking, but what are you throwing around out there in your head?
Oh, for my favorite three albums?
No, for this new album that's coming out from Callum Scott.
What? I don't know.
You have no ideas? Come on. Creative songwriter, you got to have something.
Well, who I want to collaborate with?
No, the album name.
Oh, I can't tell you that. I will be in so much trouble.
Choices. What choice? No, you can't even say what choices you have?
Ooh, I don't know. They've got eyes everywhere, so I'll
Diddy Hall is texting, don't go there. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, they're sending me my unemployment form as we speak.
Yeah, right. UB40, right? Isn't that what it is? A UB40 in the UK. So if people want to catch Callum Scott on the road, they want to see you perform, where can they get the tour dates and all the information that is Callum Scott?
Oh, Larry, the second that tour dates appear in my diary I'll be the happiest guy on the planet. All of my tour dates will be on my website, which is just callumscott.com. One L in the Callum. My grandma stipulated that when I was born. She said to my mom, Callum with one L. Mm-hmm. So it's Callum with one L, Scott.com. And that's where you can find all my tour dates. I mean, I'm praying. I've got my vaccine. I'm waiting for my second one. I'm praying that we can get on the road very, very soon. The second they come available, it'll be all on there. I'm just looking forward to getting back out and seeing people's faces, Larry. You know, performing on Zoom is cool, but there's nothing quite like performing to a real crowd.
No, of course. But I always say being on the internet, it has its advantages because you can reach a very large audience as opposed to what's just in the venue. And speaking of venues, you touched earlier on big audiences. Is Wembley like a goal? The ultimate goal, Wembley?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Wembley, when we watched Adele there, she had 80 or 90,000 people there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a crazy number. I once, actually 2016, I got to perform at the Maracana Stadium in Rio de Janeiro. I helped close the Paralympic ceremony there. Mm. And that was ridiculous as well. I mean, stadiums are... I need to like make sure I had a little word with myself side of stage before I went on. They're very intimidating, but I would love to do stadiums like that. I mean, the Pentatonix tour we went on, they were doing the big, the outdoor kind of amphitheater kind of vibes. And I thought those were so cool because they just stretch out and go for miles. You can't see people. It's that
great.
I'm in the court. Watching you kiss her, oh no. And I'm right over here, why can't you see me, oh no. And I'm giving it my all, I'm not the guy you take it home. Ooh, and I keep dancing on my own.
Gotta be a different vibe when you're playing for 1,000 people versus 80,000 people. You know, you can connect more with a smaller crowd.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I definitely, in terms of how much it means, I always, whether I was performing in front of 5 people, 5,000, 50,000, I would always take it as seriously. But yeah, for sure. When you've got a smaller audience and you can see the likes in people's eyes, it's so personal because it feels like you're sharing that story with them and it feels like, you know, I want people to feel like I'm singing to just them, you know.
Right.
I would even try and do that if it was 50,000 people. I'd be wanting to try and connect to the people at the back. Mm-hmm. You know,
and that's favorite places you like to go to play and perform, or do you have a goal of where you haven't been that you want to go to perform?
Oh, man. I mean, there's been so many. I remember when I went to LA and performed in the Troubadour, I believe it's called. Mm-hmm. That was very cool. Especially after seeing it on Rocket Man, I was like, I've performed there. That's very cool. But yeah, I mean, I've performed, like I said, performed right across America and there were so many amazing venues. I mean, do you know what? If you put me on an upside down apple cart in the middle of the street and there was an audience there, that would be enough for me. The idea of playing live and to people who, you know, who are taking it in. I suppose one thing with my music is that it's very kind of heart on your sleeve, very vulnerable, but confident and very passionate and emotional. I think people can just, people can relate to that, right, Larry? I think people, you know, in the, especially with Biblical, the reason why that for me is such a poignant song is because I think that's one thing that this pandemic, you know, had robbed from people was that connection with people and to talk about love and to people more than ever know how it feels to be with their loved ones now, right? So I feel like, you know, that translates all the way through my music and all the way through my performances. And, you know, you put me anywhere and sing and I'm a happy guy.
Well, I hope we can put you in Washington in the VOA studios the next time you're through the area, through the United States. When the album's out, I'd love to have you back so we can talk more in depth about the album. We'll have a title of the album by that time.
Yes, I won't get slapped with an unemployment sticker.
That's it. No unemployment benefit forms. But thank you, Callum Scott, for joining us.
Thank you, Laurie.
It's a pleasure to meet you and talk to you. Congratulations on all the success and on the success of the new single, which is beautiful, and it's available now. So thank you very much, Callum Scott.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you to all of your viewers. I really, really appreciate the time. I can't wait to be back.
Thank you. Callum Scott, our guest. Biblical is the name of the new song. My name is Larry London. You're watching The Voice of America, VOA TV. Thanks for tuning in.